Welcome back to another episode of the Return of the Roar podcast. My name is Brendan Nunes. Got Franco Cardo, Frankie Cardicelli here with me. What's going on, man?
Brendan, you know, it's Monday morning, just another fun night at Golden One Center. And I was looking forward to this morning. I watched my spring training baseball. You know, I put it on for a little escape, a little, you know, if anyone out there is a Giants fan or A's fan, you know, sorry about the A's fans out there as you wear your A's hat today. Yeah. But I'm a Yankee guy. Flip on good old Yes Network this morning, and I get the news that Gerrit Cole is getting an MRI on his right elbow, which usually means there could be Tommy John. So I'm unraveling, but I'm doing okay. I'm having as good of a morning as I can have after the last 12 hours, I guess I've had, or 24 hours. But another just bad night. Not bad. I don't want to say bad night. We have our fun at Golden One Center, but overall a bad night for the Kings. And the home struggles continue, man. I'm just kind of trying to put my head into why they can't win games at home. It just really doesn't make much sense to me.
Yeah, like you said, some Yankee fandom troubles, and the Sacramento Kings probably aren't really helping you much. They just lost last night to the Houston Rockets, 112-104. They're now 0-3 against the Houston Rockets. I believe the only other team they have not beaten in the Western Conference is the New Orleans Pelicans, who they lost to four different times. And it's worth noting that the first two losses in Houston, which was a back-to-back, maybe not back-to-back, but two consecutive games in Houston, were without De'Aaron Fox.
And Trey Lyles.
That is, good memory on that one for sure. And the Kings were fully healthy in this one, except for Sasha Vezenkov. Davion Mitchell was questionable going into the game, ends up playing. And really, in this one, the Kings couldn't hit a three to save their life. They're 18.8% from three on the night, 6 of 32. They often lose when they can't hit threes. And post-game, there was a lot of Mike Brown. It sounded very similar to the Miami game. Like, Houston is a very good defensive team. And don't get it twisted, they actually are a good defensive team. That is what they do well. And they've been rolling a little bit recently. This is all the excuses that I'm attempting to make for losing to the Houston Rockets for the third time in a row. But a team that defends the paint really well. Sacramento's getting a little too deep. A lot of turnovers. 9 turnovers for Domantas Sabonis. Actually not a season high. His season high was 11 against the Charlotte Hornets, by the way. Don't love to hear that one. But, you know, there's some other positives in here, I guess, like the 20 of 23 from the free throw line is encouraging. Davion going 2 of 5 from 3 is encouraging. But he was your best three-point shooter on the night. And I think any night where Davion is your best three-point shooter, you're probably not going to do great.
No, and like, there's like a clear line. It's like the rule of 35%. And if you look at the Kings game logs, I mean, anyone then can look at it on Basketball Reference, but you can see it too. When the Kings shoot over 35% from three, they are 28-9 this season. When they shoot under that mark, 34 or worse, 8-18. So last night, we look at a game where the Kings really do try to kind of find their rhythm on offense. They get it going from three. And they couldn't get that going in the first half. So what they do, they go after the paint. I think they were outscoring the Rockets 36-20 in the first half in the paint. And Houston decided to take that away in the second half. They took that away. They clogged the paint. Almost like saying, which the pressure on the perimeter was there too, but almost forcing the Kings to kind of get it going from three. They never did. And it kind of just goes to show, like, back to last year's team too, this team relies on its three-point shooting so much. And when you look at the inconsistency from guys like Herter, Keegan Murray, who was kind of going in the first quarter, then never really got going again. We've seen that from him a lot this season. De'Aaron Fox has been good overall, but I think he was 2-9 last night. When the Kings aren't making threes as a team, there really is like a very slim chance they're going to win. Like the wins, when they do happen, they look like the game against the Spurs on Thursday, where it's like the ugliest win, just gritting it out, just squeaking through the worst team in the West kind of situation. One of those wins. But again, that's what Ime Udoka does. He did it with Boston. He's a defensive coach. I mean, even back when he played for the Kings here, he was a defensive-minded guy. And that's just one of those teams that has the Kings' numbers. Maybe it's matchup-based. It might just be defensive scheming. I don't know. But the Kings' three-point shooting, over the past four games, they're shooting 29% from three. It's just not going to get it done. And it kind of goes back to me to the inconsistent play we're seeing from those players, man. Like, they're just not really who they were last year.
Yeah, you mentioned some of those three-point numbers, kind of just pulled it up here. Every time they're below 30%, they have been 9-4, which, not great. And I feel like it speaks to the team defense, really. If you can't win games where shots aren't falling, where your offense isn't there, it's probably because you suck at defense. And to be honest, the Kings have been so bad defensively post All-Star break. Really, I mean, most of the season, there were some encouraging signs at specific moments, but really specific games. Like there's a quarter here and there, or there's a game like they had against Memphis on New Year's, which Memphis is not a very good team for what it's worth. Or there's a good game mixed in against like Denver and Minnesota here and there. But overall, it is kind of even quarter to quarter, like we've talked about. And you see it in that Houston game where Sacramento does okay in that first half. Third quarter, they score 14 points. And like your offense just can't stall like that when you're as bad as the Kings are defensively. And it happens way too often.
And that was their lowest in a quarter, I think. 14 points was their lowest in a quarter. And to kind of go with the defense as well, I completely agree. I mean, did Houston shoot the cover off the ball last night? I don't think so. I mean, they shot 46 from the field, 41 from three. That's that mark, though. They keep letting opponents shoot over 40% from three. And over their past six games, which is, you know, it's pretty solid sample size, opponents are shooting 42% from three. Again, the Kings currently hold the worst three-point defense in the NBA. They're just under 40%, letting opponents shoot under 40% from three, just right there. Again, like I think that all the forward progress we saw with the defense that was more like towards midseason has just kind of completely gone away. And this team has just not really been able to. I mean, aside from, again, against a bad team, San Antonio, they were able to get some big stops in that game down the stretch. But that's an inexperienced young team, again, which is crazy. Look at the Kings and say that they're, you know, they have veterans and they have playoff experience. They do. I mean, they're coming off a playoff appearance. They have a couple of guys that have been in the league for a while. You put late game pressure on a young team like the Spurs, it works out, but not every team is going to give the same way. You know, they're not going to bend, you know, they're not going to break. A lot of teams are going to bend. And the Kings right now are not really finding ways to get that going on the defensive end again. And the offense, again, like the threes aren't falling, that's one thing. But if you're not able to at least defend at a respectable level, you keep letting your opponent shoot 40% from three. It's just not gonna go your way. And the Rockets, I don't know where they rank among league leaders in three-point shooting. I'm just clicking on their basketball reference page. They currently rank 20th in made three-point field goals and 29th. Out of 30 in three-point field goal percentage. 34.9% from three. Last night, they go 41%. It's a trend we see every night. We just really see it every night with the Kings.
The Spurs were the worst three-point percentage team, and they knocked down 48% of their threes, 16 to 33. And it's the second time the Spurs have come in Golden 1 Center and knocked down above 40% of their threes as the worst three-point percentage team in the
year. Was that them last time, too?
Yes.
Like, last time, I'm looking at their... So they let Orlando shoot 57%. They let Cleveland shoot 56% on the road. That game was just a complete wash in Cleveland. It was just like not even a game. They lost by 26 points. They let the Pistons the night they lost to Detroit. They let the Pistons shoot 55% from three.
So I mean, gross.
They've let seven opponents shoot 50% from three or higher. They've won one of those games, and it was that insane game at Golden State in January where Harrison Barnes scored, I think, 39 points, but they shot 45% for themselves. But the point is, I'm looking at right here. Okay, let me get the final tally here. Let's go to 45. They've let 18 games. They've let opponents shoot 45% or higher. I could pull it up.
From three?
Yes.
18, holy.
18 games. They've let opponents shoot 45% or higher. Going down to the final thing, I'll say 29 games, 40% or higher. That's got to be the most in the NBA. I mean, obviously the numbers portray that they are the worst three-point defense, but almost 30 games, you've let, it's almost half the season, you've let teams shoot 40% from three. I don't know. There's no easy answer either. There's no easy solution. Do you think it's more of just like a personnel thing at this point? Like I don't know. They go to zone sometimes. They make these switches to zones near the end of a quarter or in different situations. Is it more they needed to stick with zone and do you think that works for them? Or do you think it's still, that's not really working for them as well? I'm just wondering what you're seeing because you are the X's and O's guy. You see the game differently. Is there an easy fix? I guess I'm asking you. There's no easy fix, I would say, from just like a layman. But what do you see?
No, I mean, the guy that has to fix this, like the Bob the Builder, is Monty McNair. You know, like, I do think it's roster construction. You look at, I like that they've tried the zone because you're just not good on defense. So just try to muck it up a little bit. And it started, it seemed like fourth quarter of that Miami game where the Kings were really down. And then they almost brought it back against Miami because they went to that zone. And I feel like we've seen it here and there since, but it's gimmicky. It's like searching for something because really everybody on the floor, like Keegan at his best is a very good defender. De'Aaron at his best is a very good defender. At their worst, they're both still really bad defenders and they are inconsistent. And the other three in that typical starting lineup of Kevin Huerter's getting attacked. Like he's getting targeted more than I feel like we've ever seen.
Every
teams are just like, get me in a switch with that guy and let's see what we can do. And it's from the jump every night. And that's why his minutes are going down. Harrison Barnes, you could say similar things, struggles to get through screens, can be a little late to rotate. He's definitely slow footed at this point to the point where he's not closing games sometimes. You know, I think there was that game they played against the Lakers in L.A. where Trey Lyles is closing the game in place of Harrison Barnes. I think we saw it last night as well against Houston, that Trey Lyles is closing that game. And that's because Harrison Barnes isn't cutting it. Domantas Sabonis has his defensive limitations. Obviously, if you have a center is the most important defensive position. If you have a high caliber defensive center, it's so much easier for all these other guys to get away with some mistakes. And obviously Domas doesn't really provide that. Like they just don't have the personnel in my mind. And I feel like Mike is trying. They're switching a lot. Maybe more than I would like, but I think sometimes kind of that three guard lineup lets you do that a little bit, but they're just not good at this. I don't know how else to put it. Like they try and people are on Mike Brown about this, but I don't know what to say to those people because how was Mike Brown supposed to take the exact same roster from last year and just make them better?
That's the biggest thing. Like, how many teams in the NBA, and we should probably do, like maybe not now, but or later or in the offseason, look back and say, how many teams are identical one right. through seven or one through eight, I guess, Malik, Trey, Davion, how many teams are identical one through eight in the rotations? I don't think there are any. I mean, off the top of my head, Minnesota maybe, but they made some bench moves. Milwaukee
Cleveland
made moves.
Cleveland added Strus.
Cleveland, yes, they added Strus. Like, I don't know how many teams are identical. The Celtics made moves. The Suns obviously made moves. The Pelicans maybe are the same one through seven. Like,
yeah, Dallas made deadline moves. The Clippers traded for James Harden.
Pelicans I needed health. They weren't healthy last year either. I mean, I'm looking at Miami made moves. The Knicks obviously were very aggressive. I think the Kings might be the only team in the NBA that have an identical one through eight in the rotation. So when you're, I mean, what's the definition of insanity?
Right.
Like I get that, but I don't know what you expect from a team that struggled on defense last year. We're horrible on defense. I think they're 25th in defensive rating. That's where they finished last year. This year they're at 20th. Steps forward, I guess, right? But
post All-Star break, they're 26th.
They're right back to it. Like it's really, we're seeing the same exact thing. But opposing defenses have gotten the kind of like the gist of what the Kings blueprint is. And like last year we didn't see Kevin get hunted as early as we have now. Like he's getting completely taken out of games because of the fact that
it's wild.
Opposing teams are putting, you know, they're switching their best offensive player onto Kevin and saying feast. And the Kings are having to get, you know, they're being put in a hole early and they're having guys that are behind on rotations. They're getting guys that are having to pick up Kevin. You know, Kevin obviously has been frustrated through this playing time. These are things that weren't there last year. The hunting wasn't there as much. It came, but not as much. So like I was talking about with Dave and Jason this morning on the morning show, like I feel like we're at a point where we're just kind of like hanging on and just seeing what's going to happen. Like this team is what it is. There's no buyout market situation is going to happen. There's no trade deadline's over. Like this.
Otto Porter did just get waived, Frankie.
Otto Porter
Jr. got waived by the Jazz.
I was a big Otto Porter guy. Like after they won the finals and he was a free agent.
I like him too. And Mike Brown has talked about how important he was to that finals run, him and Gary Payton.
They brought in JTA. So maybe they should bring in Porter. But I just feel like this roster has been the same thing for 2 years. And I think we'll have a lot of conversations in the offseason. Unfortunately, I feel like it's dumb to try to have these conversations now, but like, it's a personnel issue. It's a personnel issue across the board. This group is, I think it has 20 games and then the play-in or playoffs to see what they have. If it's not there, obviously we know like that there's a strong possibility already that they're going to make some kind of moves. Like this group probably will not be fully intact regardless, but just, this is what happens when you go into the same season with the same, a different season with the same roster as last year with the same flaws, they get magnified and the same flaws they had last year being magnified, except now the offensive inconsistency, which wasn't really there last year, has reared its ugly head.
And I still think long-term roster construction, they're in a fine spot. Like I get the patience from Monty McNair, but I'm only so willing to kick the can down the road. Like once we reach this off season, I'm expecting some big shakeup. And even then, like if it doesn't happen, I could maybe give you till the next deadline before I'm like, okay, what is happening here? Like, what is the plan? And the home road splits have also been really bad this year. You know, just from offensive defensive rating standpoint, Kings are so much better offensively at home, 115.3 on the road, 118.5 at home, but their defense is so much worse, 114.8 on the road, 118.4 at home. So both those numbers end up, you know, evening out, but I don't know what's up with not being able to defend at home. The Houston one was a little different. Again, usually they're good offensively, but struggle to defend. But they really struggled to play at home for some reason. And that's where these boos come from. And they struggle to play against lower level teams. And De'Aaron Fox jokes post game yesterday that, you know, at least we're only playing good teams in the playoffs. Right. And he is just kind of joking, but there is something to that. And the Kings probably won't start the playoffs at home. So maybe we get the best version of the Kings against a good team on the road.
Yeah, and I feel like that's the insane part, too. It's like, it's crazy to say that, like, you know, just got to get there and maybe things get better. Like their shortcomings have been against teams that are well beneath them in the standings this year. It's not like they've played the Thunder and played the Clippers, which they got beat a couple of good times. They got the best of them in LA a couple of weeks ago. It's not like they're playing these teams ahead of them and they're just getting completely dog walked. Like they've been as good or better than some of the teams ahead of them in head to head matchups. And just one quick thing before I lose track of it, the 3-point thing, I did look it up. Teams that lead the league in opponent, most games by an opponent with 50% or better from three this year. Number one is the Spurs, who are probably going to be up there for number one overall pick. They'll be in the contention for it again. They've allowed opponents to shoot 50% or better from three 9 times this year. Oof. The Kings are right beneath them with 7. Beneath them, Brooklyn was 7, Utah was 6. So the only team with a above 500 record in that top four is the Kings. So
none of those teams are even in the play-in.
No. And that's kind of comes back to me with this season as well. I'm looking ahead to, did we solidify, or I guess, did we confirm that the Kings need to finish 7th or 8th in the regular season standings, and that pick will convey to Atlanta?
It's a good question. I have not exactly, but I do know that it's locked in before the play-in happens when it comes to your pick. But I don't know how that works also with the Eastern Conference being considered. You know what I mean?
I'm trying to see right now, too. Teams that did not make the playoffs in the past year participate in state lottery-style process to determine the first 3 picks. Even teams that made the playoffs or participated in the play-in tournament could be included in the draft lottery if they acquired draft picks from other teams through trades. Don't know if that really explains the answer. If the 9th or 10th seed team manages to win both of its games in the tournament, it will no longer participate in the NBA draft lottery.
Okay, so you would move up. Got you. So, because I'm looking here, Miami actually did draft 18th last year, even though they finished the regular season. Well, they finished 8th, actually.
Yeah, and even like this section's like, it's a bit confusing. Normally, the team that finishes 9th or 10th in its conference is eligible for the NBA lottery. If a 9th or 10th seed manages to win both games, a 7th or 8th seed will need to lose both of its games to... Yeah, I don't know. I think just finishing 7th or 8th seems to be the goal no matter what, because like we're talking about offseason plans and what is the situation. If they get to the, let's say they fall the 9th, they go to the play-in, They lose the first play-in game. That pick is going to be Atlanta's, I think, again, right, for the next year, or they can choose to use it this year.
But yeah, I would guess that the Kings probably tried to talk to Atlanta and be like, hey, just take the pick unprotected this year. And I would think that from Atlanta's perspective, you'd be fine with that. Like, it's still technically doing Atlanta a favor or beneficial to them.
Yeah, what are the Kings going to do with a 24th overall or 22nd? I guess it'd be probably more like 21 or 20, actually. No, it probably might be like 18 or 19 if they don't make the playoffs. I don't know. I just feel like when you look at the moves they would want to make, having those future draft picks is kind of like the ace, you know, like that's what you want. Like, you want to be able to kind of dangle those draft picks and make those aggressive moves. So that's kind of like more my main thing I'm looking at here. Like, I think the play-in, it's pretty much set. Like, the Kings would really need to just completely fall apart. They have a 7.5 game lead over Houston right now for the 11th spot. Like, they're probably going to be, like, there's like a 99% chance they're going to be playing a meaningful postseason game.
Yeah.
But the meaningful postseason game will be a lot more meaningful if it determines whether or not they have to give that pick to Atlanta or keep it. Because if Atlanta chooses they want to kind of like roll the dice and let it go next year, that handicaps how much you can do in the offseason. That kind of just kind of hamstrings you on the ability to move future picks. So that's my main thing I'm looking for. But it's a frustrating time. For sure. I think everyone's trying to figure out, like we were talking about this morning with those guys too, like no one really seems to have an answer. Like, the players are trying to figure it out. The coach is trying to figure it out. We're trying to figure it out. Like, there's no clear, easy fix.
Which is what's so frustrating and why, like, I tweet out or transcribing yesterday's postgame and said something about De'Aaron Fox. Like, his quote was roughly, "We know we have to be more consistent. We have to be better," sort of thing. And everybody is blowing it up of like, same thing over and over. Like, we've heard this plenty and nothing's changing. And I get it because, like you said, I don't really know where they're supposed to go here. And like, are we at the point where, so now this upcoming back-to-back the Sacramento Kings have, right, is going to be against the Milwaukee Bucks and the Los Angeles Lakers on Tuesday, Wednesday, which, by the way, watching the Lakers last night, I don't know how much you caught of that game. Anthony Davis went stupid. It like ridiculous. Like, I think it was like 25, 25, 5-7 or something like that. And he said post game, you know, we got Sacramento next. They beat us last time and we owe them one. And so they're circling that game a little bit. They're chasing the Kings in the standings. But are we at the point where we expect tough games, sneaking a win against the San Antonio Spurs, losing to the Houston Rockets because you score 14 points in a quarter, and now are they about to just beat the Milwaukee Bucks?
I think there's a very good chance that that's what happens. Like, that's the way it always goes. Like, I'm looking at, what was the one before that? With they lose to Chicago, they beat the Lakers, they get completely destroyed by Denver in Denver, and then they come back and they beat the Timberwolves, who've been one of the best teams in the league at home. This is the way the season goes. Like, this is kind of just like, it's like a goof. Like, the Kings are goofing. They're going to just get beat by some of the worst teams in the league, or almost lose to the worst team in the West. And then they're going to beat the Bucks or beat the Lakers again. But like you said, I think a motivated Anthony Davis, which I'm assuming he's probably motivated before. Like, I think I do think that the narrative of like the Sabonis, he was 7-0. I think he's 9-0 now. He was 8-0 going into the last game. There's no way that Anthony Davis has not heard that or like not seen that.
It feels like after last game is when that really, like, you know, blew up on socials a bit, to the
point
where he probably would become aware.
And we notice from being around like the team or the locker room or people that are around guys, like, they see everything. There are some guys in the league put things away, like Jokic. I doubt he even has social media apps on his phone. I think he said he doesn't. There are players in the league that don't see stuff,
but they talk to other players who are aware. And it spreads.
Things get around. Like, they hear things, they see things. Like, in this day and age, like, it's there. I am looking forward to that, though. I want to see a motivated Anthony Davis against Domantas Sabonis. It's a good test for him. Sabonis has outplayed him. Like, it's not like a matter of, oh, like, the Kings have a better team. Like, Sabonis's individual numbers have been far better in head-to-head matchups than Anthony Davis. But Anthony Davis is more than capable of causing damage. So I'm looking forward to that on Wednesday. But again, that's a big game, because if the Kings are to lose tomorrow, Lakers are off till Wednesday. They have a long time to rest. I know LeBron's been battling injuries, an ankle issue. AD's got his things going on. If the Kings lose to tomorrow, to the Bucks tomorrow, they'll have a one game lead over the Lakers, which means we can see these two teams tied if the Kings lose this back to back in the standings. Like, it's just that point,
Frankie.
There's sixth one day, there's seventh the next. It's back and forth. It's back and forth. Like, I don't know if there's any meaningful games today in the West. Well, there's Phoenix, but it's a scoreboard watching every night. Like, it's a scoreboard watching, which I think we talked about before. It's fun that to like watch what's going on in the league, but it's also frustrating because this Kings team, they're nine games over. They've proven they can be really, really good against the best, but they might be playing a 9-10 game if they don't pick it up. And that's just super underwhelming and disappointing, I think, if the Kings finish in a 9-10 spot.
A 9-10 against any of LeBron James, Anthony Davis, Luka Doncic, Kyrie Irving, or Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green. Like, I'm going to pass on that one. I would rather
Kevin Durant and Booker.
Yeah, or KD and Book. Yeah. And, like, we've talked about this before, but you laid out some of, like, the, you know, losing to Miami, or sorry, getting blown out by Denver and then beating Minnesota. Like, you can go back and we've done this before, but it is wild to look at. Like, you lose to Detroit and then you beat Denver. You blow out Denver, by the way. There's a, what else do we got in here? They absolutely killed Memphis and then lost to the Heat. Or there's a four-game losing streak, and then all of a sudden they go on a four-game winning streak right after. There's so many of these. There's a 20-plus point loss to the Portland Trailblazers at home that gets forgotten in all of this, by the way. There's so many within here that are just like, how did you allow this to happen? The back-to-back getting whooped by New Orleans losses that were on the road, the Houston ones that we've talked about. There's a lot of really bad losses this season, and it's hard to make sense of it. And I honestly don't really know where to go from here. Like, they are as inconsistent as against. They're a team that fully is reliant on their offense, and I do think that offense is good enough. Like I mentioned, defensively they're 26th post All-Star break. Offensively they're fifth, and that's after putting up the stinker of 104 against Houston, which is easily below top five typical offense in today's NBA. But I don't know, man. Like, it's hard because I don't want to get to the point where I'm like, well, the stars have to be better, and that's the issue, because I do feel like these complementary pieces are not doing them any favor. But there is a combination of both to an extent here. Like, De'Aaron has a really bad second half last night after a really good start. Same with Malik Monk, Domantas Sabonis and his nine turnovers. Like, I don't know, it's just a little bit of everything. Like, people want to try and point blame in certain places, but it really feels like nobody's blameless, and that's fine. Like, I don't think a majority of blame should be placed like here, here, or here. Yeah. It's just this construction and this grouping is just not going to cut it outside of to the caliber of what we've already seen and known, really.
And I think that is very important as well. And that's kind of like the frustrating, annoying part of it too, that there is no clear thing to point at and say, like, oh, like, if De'Aaron Fox is hurt and missed 25 games, be like, well, they missed their best player for a long time. So that makes sense. They're inconsistent. Everything's kind of, everyone's a step slower, and the offense isn't as efficient, and the defense is struggling because De'Aaron's like, what, third in the league in steals right now. If Sabonis was kind of going through a rough stretch, that hasn't happened. He has not stopped for 50 games now, I think, almost 50 games. If there's like a pie chart of who do we, like, who's getting the biggest slice of blame, which I think is kind of harsh too. Like, it probably is the front office, which, yeah, I think is a little unfair, because I know it does take two to tango in some of these deals. And I think Monty was being very guarded with this approach, and I think that he's deserved and earned that right to have a little more slack and a little more rope to work with. But, you know, you don't want to waste time with this group, because again, you do have a window. De'Aaron Fox is 26. Sabonis is 27. You have Keegan on a rookie scale contract, and you really want to kind of maximize this window. And like you said, I think that it does take more than just a 1 year window to really become a contender in the Western Conference. It took a bunch of other teams multiple years. Some teams made it all the way to the conference finals, never did anything else, like the Rockets or the Clippers from Lob City those years.
Mike Brown talked about how when Mike Malone was in Denver, there were probably two, 3 years where they didn't even make the playoffs at first.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's a process. you know, I'm not going to put any trust the process jokes in there, but like, right. I think that we're not quite to that point where it's like time to evaluate everything and everyone, but it's very telling with this group, this 1-8, something's going to have to probably change like this summer or in next deadline, probably before next deadline. I don't think they want to go into a season with the same exact formula they've had the past two seasons. I mean, teams have figured them out already. I can't imagine what one more offseason would do to that. But it is frustrating because there is not one clear issue. It's a different issue or different player not picking up their end every single night.
Yeah, I mean, is there anything you feel like that's been new recently? Because I'm at the point where I'm like, this is just the same story, a different day, and they're just repeating their mistakes and kind of am running out of things to say, to ask about to these guys, players, coaches, because it's the exact same thing. Like, has there been anything really new to you post All-Star break-ish?
No, I mean, I'm looking at just like their recent track record. It's just, we say roller coaster a lot, and, you know, I don't want to beat it at dead horse with the inconsistent stuff, but just looking at how up and down their shooting percentages go, the 3-point numbers really are the ones I'm looking at. They go from 50 to 38 to 29, 27, back up to 39, down to 27. Like, there's all over the place with 3-point shooting. There's not one area where the Sacramento Kings are going to be dominating you in every single night like there was last year. Points in the paint, I think they're, I don't know where they are in the NBA rankings. I can look right now, but another area, I don't feel like they've, you know, they haven't really taken advantage of that. Points in the paint per game this season, the Kings are, they jumped to seventh. So they actually have been doing, relying on that a little bit more. But when you have Domantas Sabonis, who's been your only truly stalwart as far as being a impactful player every single night, obviously the turnovers are tough, but he's a double-double and 5 or more assists every single night for, you know, going back to December. It's just kind of been status quo. The season's been the season. It's been like this since the first month. I mean, even going back to January, what was it? I pulled it up just a minute ago. January 5th, the Kings are 15-14 since January 5th. So we're talking about a 500 team for pretty much almost half the season. Like, I think you pointed out, was they had a 6-game winning streak early in the season. Other than that, it's just kind of been a mix of 4-game winning streaks to a 3-game losing streak, a 3-game winning streak to a 2-game losing streak. It's always 2 steps forward, 1 step back. They can't just coast and go on a real run. And I feel like that's kind of been what separated them. Like, they've been so close. Like, they've hit 10 games over and been like in the 6th seed with a 1.5-game lead over the 7. And they've taken their foot off the gas every time, and the teams behind them have caught them. And now they're looking back up at the top 6. So,
with 19, were they sitting at 4 earlier this year? Or 5?
I think they were sitting at 4. Like,
there was this time where it looked like they were like,
it was December. It was like late November, early December, when the Clippers were still trying to make it work with Harden, because they lost like 7 in a row early in the year, which I can't believe that the Clippers, I'm pretty sure that was the same year, wasn't it? Where the Clippers had lost 7 games in a row, and Kawhi's like, that's the most I've ever lost in a row in my whole life. I'm looking right now. So. They did. They started the season 3-7. I think in the last game of that streak, they traded for Harden, and they kind of hovered around 500 until mid-December. And that's when they went on, I think, a 9-game winning streak. So yeah, the Kings were a 4 seed for a little bit, but it really kind of coincides when the Clippers took off and the Kings started kind of, you know, coming out of that 6-game winning streak is when things kind of went downhill. But it's just, there's really no way to figure this team out. I've tried to figure it out. I think we've all tried to see what the real issue is. If the consensus is roster construction, I think that's the easiest thing to point to. Roster construction, you have the same exact build you had a year ago. I think De'Aaron's been playing very well over the past stretch. Last night, you know, aside from that, he's been great. Been a go-to guy for them. Sabonis has been living up to, I think, the money he's been being paid this year. Malik Monk's probably going to win 6th man of the year, but it's those other guys. Harrison Barnes, Keegan Murray, Kevin Huerter. Davion's been playing well. You know, first half of the season wasn't, but playing very well now. And now it's a matter of what Mike is looking for. Like, Keon Ellis is back in the rotation now and playing some pretty good minutes. I'm not sure, did he play more than Kevin last night?
Keon played 17, just under 18. I think Kevin ended up passing that.
We were talking about it. I think we were looking at Kevin was at, I think, 15 or 17. Yeah, we were wondering if he was going to play over 20.
Is what he ended up with, yeah.
And he was on the floor late in crunch time, too. So he definitely, that's the most he's played in a while. The results weren't great. 0-3 from 3, 6 points. But I'm kind of looking at that. If the Kings are really going to maximize this year and, like, make the most out of it, they're going to need more from their guys. They're starting five. Like, their starting five needs to be better. They need to have impact from those guys. Malik Monk can't carry everything off the bench. De'Aaron, it can't be the De'Aaron Fox and Malik Monk show every night with Sabonis on the side doing his usual, you know, 20, 10, and 5 or more. Like, they need to have someone else step up and make an impact. Three players cannot just, you know, these good teams you see around the NBA, they get more than just impact from three guys. Like, you need a group cohesive effort.
Yeah, that starting group that was really good last year, played 654 minutes so far this year, and that's Fox, Herter, Murray, Barnes, Sabonis. 120.6 offensive rating, 114.8 defensive rating. So plus 5.8 net rating is not bad. Last year, they were better offensively, but actually worse defensively. Like, weirdly, the numbers of the group look fine, but I would bet that post All-Star break, that's probably been a little bit of a different story. And I guess the one other thing I'll shout, and it, you definitely started to mention, is like, I think Davion Mitchell's been playing really, really well recently. You go, since start of the new year, he's 43% from three. His shot looks really good recently, actually. Like, I feel like, which is, trust me, not something I feel like I've said often, maybe ever, to be honest. I feel like he's missing front and back more often than not now, yeah, rather than these like really ugly, oh my God, that wasn't close, almost wedgie shots, you know? He looks confident. I mean, sorry to be a jerk, but like, there were some really ugly misses.
Well, like, the numbers reflected. He's been a very bad 3-point shooter. And I think that was the biggest conversation, is can he turn it around? And he was working with Steph Curry's shot coach. Like, there was so much talk around it and we hadn't seen it. And he's been just a, you know, I won't say automatic, but I think it was 51% over the past 20 games. On 1.8 field goal attempts per game. So the volume's not insane, but he's picking and choosing his shots very well. And I think a lot of the time it's a product of the offense that's just kind of rolling. And Davion's usually open in the corner. I think defense has kind of let him go. And
they do not care.
They're not paying much attention to him. I wouldn't say they're giving him, like, I think it was Giddy that I can't remember. Defense just completely
literally waved him off.
He's like, said, whatever, shoot it. And he completely bricked it. It's not quite that to that point, but, they're not paying attention to him in the corner, and that's his favorite spot. He's getting his feet set. He's having all the time in the world, and the shot's going in, which I think is a good sign. If defenses are continuing to give it to him, I think he should shoot him more. Like, they're looking good. Like you said, he's missing in the right spots. He's not – I think there was one shot early in the year that we – I think you might have cut it. He hit, like, the side of the backboard. I think he said maybe it was the worst three.
Dude, there's more than one this year where I'm just like, whoa.
It's like, whoa. But you know what? To give him credit, that's not a thing anymore. But
no, recently
some tough ones. But if they can get meaningful minutes out of him and lengthen the bench, that was to me like huge. If Keon Ellis could be impactful, if that can continue, which is a shot in the pan situation, we don't know. We'll see. But if he can be impactful, if Davion can continue to play the offense he's been playing and continue to bring his defensive intensity, Trey Lyles has been kind of hit or miss lately too. But
yeah.
I think it's a depth issue as well. Like, the Kings just 1-9 or 1-8 haven't been consistent outside of Sabonis and Fox as of late, really. It's just been those two guys.
And yeah, Keon also been playing well recently. They've been rolling three guard lineups a lot, whether it's like Fox, Malik, and Keon, or when De'Aaron's sitting, you'll see Malik, Davion, and Keon all together. And when Davion and Keon are finding ways to contribute offensively, which I think Keon is just straight up a good 3-point shooter, and we mentioned the progress we've seen from Davion so far. If those guys are able to knock down shots, I think defensively it does help a lot with what they're able to do. But like, I saw people freaking out about Keon not playing after the Minnesota game. And I get it. He played really well in that one. He started in place of De'Aaron Fox. Davion also played really well. And I didn't hate Mike just going to Davion. And then after the game, he kind of says, or the day after a practice, like, yeah, I need to find a way to get Keon minutes. And he's done that. And he's replaced Keon with Chris Duarte pretty much. And it taking one game to do that is fine. That's I don't hate that personally. But saying this all to say, if we're sitting here talking about should it be Keon Ellis or Chris Duarte playing in that second unit, and that's what people are holding on to, hoping this is going to make a difference.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like it doesn't matter, but there are bigger issues above that in the roster that are going to sort of nullify the difference that the eighth, ninth guy is really able to make. So I love Keon. I love what he's done, but the Kings need, like, Keon Ellis emerging as a rotation player is not turning this season around.
That's, you know, like, what an, I mean, it's like an early season, like, story. Like, oh, Keon's in the rotation. That's great. Like, you need more from Keegan Murray. I'm looking at Keegan Murray, who can be a great asset, a great weapon on offense and defense when he's playing well. He had his shoulder taped up for a game and he had to wear the sleeves, protective sleeves over it for one game.
Which,
then it was
for
gone.
What it's worth, we never are going to know the specifics of everybody's injuries.
No, they're very, very close to the chest and very protective of their players. I think a lot of things pop up we don't even hear about. But the next game, gone. So was he dealing with the shoulder issue? I don't know. It seemed like he's fine. But I'm looking at Keegan Murray, Harrison Barnes, who really played like an all-star in that stretch where I think was Fox out for that stretch? Was it Fox that was missing time when he just went insane? Or what
I forget.
Was
De'Aaron might have been out there. I think what I remember is that Keegan just like really slowed down at the same time.
Well, now they've both been slowed down. Like they're both slowing down in unison. And that's rare, I will say. Like there really isn't many times where one of those two isn't giving you at least 15. And that's kind of the way I'm looking at it.
And the same with Kevin Malik, right? Like you get one of each pairing.
You need one of each forward guard pairing to give you 15 or more, I think. Like you need to. And like last night, pull up the box score again. But last night you get, 25, I think, from Sabonis. 25 from Sabonis. 18 from Fox. 4 in the second half. Keegan gets you 13, but 8 of those points were in the first quarter. Like the first 4 minutes of the first quarter. So he has 5 points over the final 44, 43 minutes of the game. And then you have Malik. Kevin Huerter at 6, Barnes with 5. I think you definitely need more from those guys. If Trey's also going to be quiet off the bench for 20 minutes, 5 points. It's just you don't see it around the league. Like I don't think Giannis scores 38, 40. Middleton adds, 20 and Dame adds 25 and the Bucks call it good. They get stuff from Beasley. They get stuff from Bobby Portis, they get stuff from, and I'm using the Bucks as an example because the Kings are playing them tomorrow, but teams around the league, they get group efforts. And the Kings last year got group efforts more times than not. Like their box scores last year, I was going through them. Man, the starting five scored 10 or more like so many times last year, like probably 20, 30 times last year, the five scored 10 or more. And it's just really not common for this group. You really see Fox and Sabonis doing what they do. Maybe Malik has a big night and that's pretty much it. And that's just not really a blueprint to success in my opinion, but can they figure it out over the final 19? Your guess is as good as mine, but there's no shortage of huge games coming up. And like it starts with this week, big back-to-back, huge back-to-back.
Keegan shot 7 free throws, by the way, last night. I did not notice. Second highest of his career. The highest would be a game against OKC earlier this year. Wow. He never shot more than 5 in a game last year, which is insane. And that's, he hit 7-7, by the way. He's a very efficient free throw shooter. He just never gets there.
He really doesn't.
Yeah, like you said, anybody's guesses are as good as ours for how the season's going to end. I do still hold out hope because when they play well, they play really well. I do still hold out hope that they could go on a little streak here at some point.
Yeah.
But I have no reason to actually believe in that.
And it's kind of laying it out before we go. Milwaukee Lakers this week, Tuesday, Wednesday. You got the Knicks at home on Saturday. And then again, I'm looking at like the rest of the season. Probably the only quote-unquote favorable stretch is next week. And maybe it'll help the Kings. It's a road trip for the most of it. But you have Memphis at home, who is, they're in tank mode. Their season's over. You have Toronto, who has some good young players, but their record is horrible. They are currently 23-41. So you go from Memphis at home, you go to Toronto, you go to Washington, who's the worst record in the NBA right now. They overtook the Pistons, I'm pretty sure.
Trap game.
And then you get Orlando and things kind of start ramping up. Like Orlando is a very tough team, but those three games after a tough three, you get three tough, Milwaukee, Lakers, and New York, then you get Memphis, Toronto, and Washington. After that, there's a bunch of big games. You have Dallas twice, you have the Clippers at home, you have the Pelicans, you have the Suns, you have the Thunder, even East Coast road trip. Like the Kings have been so ridiculously just, you can't figure them out at home. And it's frustrating that we're looking at the fact they have 7 road games left. They have 12 games at home. 7 on the road. And I'm already looking forward to the road games and saying, you know what, this might be the chance for the Kings to put together a winning streak because they can't win at home. So
this team makes no sense, Frankie. They drive me crazy.
It makes no sense.
You try to analyze them and predict things, and you should just always guess that they're going to beat the good teams and lose to the bad ones, I guess. Or like if they have a great win or a bad loss, the next game is going to be polar opposite. It's like the only consistent thing about this team is that they're inconsistent. And we're at the point we're far enough in that this is their identity. It's honestly been their identity for a little while, and I've just been in denial.
Yeah, I mean,
or hoping that they'd figure it out.
Looking at the game, like the little box score thing, and seeing game 60, that was like it just rung a bell for me. I'm like, oh, this season's like pretty much over, and they are. It's just who they are. Like we can't imagine in a week and a half from now we're having this conversation like almost near game 70. It's like we can't. Like, and it's good that we just kind of face it head on. This is who this team is. But can they make some noise and get hot at the right time? In sports, that's how things work out. It's usually the hottest team that going into the playoffs that can make the most noise. Kings, they can still do that. But the home stat before we got to get out of here, I know we got practice coming up. Over the past two seasons, the Kings at home, they are 40-30. That's a 57% winning percentage. They've been better on the road. They're 44-31, 58, 1% better. But 44-31 on the road over the past season and a half, 40-30 at home. It makes no sense for one of the best home atmospheres in sports, by the way. Like, I've been to a lot of sporting events in my life. A lot.
Yeah.
And I'm a little biased. Golden 1 Center, though, is insane. Insane atmosphere.
Bro, it was a San Antonio Spurs game, and they were freaking out.
On a Thursday.
Yeah.
So, can they figure it out in time? They have a bunch of home games. 12 out of 19. That is a lot. It's going to be big to see if they can pick them up, especially against all the big games they have left, Dallas twice, New Orleans and Phoenix and the Lakers, all that impact the standings. They're all at home. There's no road games with huge implications in head-to-head matchups. It's all home, all on their home turf. So no excuses, man. Like, they got to figure it out or they're going to be having an early exit. That's pretty much where we're at. This is what it is.
We're supposed to feel good about that, but I don't.
I don't feel good about it at all. I actually feel worse about it.
Yeah. Team makes no sense.
On that note,
yeah, I think that's all I got, Frank.
Yeah, we gotta go to practice.
We're gonna head out to practice. Yeah, so appreciate everybody listening. Definitely stay tuned on the Sacktown Sports YouTube page and all of your audio platforms as well. Subscriptions are always appreciated and help you stay on top of the latest episodes and check out the other great content going on whether that be YouTube live streams for the shows or obviously 1140 on your radio station, 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. and sacktownsports.com for writing from myself, Frankie, and Emil. A lot of Niners news going on. Eric Armstead breaks my heart.
Sacramento zone.
I know. It's actually the closest. Yeah. Yeah.
Insane.
He is a lot of movement. Sacramento Niner.
And yeah. Josh Jacobs just signed with the Packers. Like, there's a lot of things.
Really?
A lot of things popping off right now in the NFL.
Last night, Russell Wilson.
That's why I love the NFL and NBA off seasons. The day it starts, it's fireworks. And, you know, baseball, they're still dragging out. They have like four big names that are still in the market. So, Niners fans and Raider fans, if you're, you know, still into that, happy hunting and free agent season.
Yeah, we will see how it goes. But we'll have all of that covered across the board. Again, radio stations, also sacktownsports.com for any written content. And appreciate everybody tuning in. You'll hear from us again sometime next week.